Production. Recorded live.
Hi, welcome everyone to our Monday night conference call. Liberty Alliance is the name of our group here, and our website is newyorkcommittemen.org. That's CommittemenN.org. And tonight we're going to talk about our court case that we're going to be filing hopefully by the end of the week. And we're trying to get as many people involved as possible that might want to sign on or help with donations to support the cost of this court case. But we are suing the New York State. We're suing the governor. We're suing the Senate. And we're suing the Assembly together, all three. And we're looking to have gun control removed in the entire state of New York. So if everyone goes out to newyorkcommittemen.org, and on our website on the left side, it's the third link down, you'll see gun law lawsuit. If you click on that, and you on the documents, we have click here. There's about seven documents. It says click here on it. I think it's about the fifth one down, one, two, three, four, five. Fifth one down, it says to read our sixth draft of our action, which is the complaint. You know, they call it complaint in civil law, but in common law, it's called an action. You can open that document up, and you can kind of follow along as I breeze through this document, trying to kind of set the stage. We're looking for people to get involved, and we need as many people as possible to get involved, you know, for them to really take us serious. We'd like to get, you know, 100 people, maybe more. Who knows? We're getting this out real far. Maybe we can get a lot more than that. I know I decided not to do this court case unless we have at least 25 people. And that number was chosen because that's how many people it took to put the Magna Carta into effect. You know, in our Declaration of Independence, it was 56 people. So I'd like to get 100 if we could, but I can live with 25 or 56. We do have maybe about 12 people already signed up, and I'm getting calls, so I think people are starting to move towards this, and tomorrow we're heading up to the rally up in Albany, New York. It's a gun rally. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to get a lot of signatures up there, so we should get a good start. But again, we also need donations. Money is very important, obviously, to make things work. So anybody who can afford to do that should go out to newyorkcommittemen.org and hopefully make a donation, $20, $10. You know, if you can afford 100 or more, hey, whatever you can do. Some people have the dollars, they could do it, and most of us are broke. Maybe we can only throw $20 in. But if everybody throws a little bit, it'll accumulate and it'll have some meaning. all right, anyway, let's take a look at our court case briefly, and then we're going to open up the lines for conversation on this for anybody who has questions. And again, we're open for comments on this, and if anybody has any case law that they think might be helpful to us, either U.S. Supreme Court or New York Supreme Court case law, you know, we're open to that. I don't know if it's something very short, they can bring it up quickly, but maybe they can email that to us. I'm John at J-O-H-N at newyorkcommittemen.org. My contact information is right there on the site. Hit contact, and you have my fax and my phone and my email address, so you can email me anything. So any case law, any good maxims that people might have that they think might work with our case, any founding father quotes that would work with this. I found in my research here, we have to be very careful with the quotes because we had quite a few quotes, I'd say at least six quotes that were founding father quotes that turned out to be fraudulent. They were not correct quotes. They didn't exist. And I don't know why people go and make that up. Maybe the enemy does that for whatever purposes. Maybe we would take it and run with it, and then they say, ha-ha, I don't know. But in any event, we want to be very careful with whatever quotes we do get. So, you know, research it. There's a website out there, Second Amendment something, and they've got quite a bit information on phony quotes. But when you Google the quote, you'll find there's maybe one site or two sites out there that says everything's false, so you've got to be a little careful on that too. But we want to get the citation and then check out the citation, trace it out, make sure it's real. We don't want anything phony in our court case. But anyway, let's take a look at this court case real quick, and then we'll open the lines up. On the first page, we have action at law. Obviously, we don't have any names in yet. Right now, we've got New York State as the defendant, but we're going to be very specific, and we're going to be serving the governor. We're going to serve the Senate, and we're going to serve the Congress. And so the first page is really kind of an introduction and sets the stage for the process of common law, and also lets the court know that we're the people. We're not just citizens. We're not subjects of theirs. We are the people. We're the owners of this country. We are the ordainers of the Constitution. We ordained and established it, and therefore we're the boss. And the point of our court case is that Congress doesn't have the power to legislate our behavior, nor do they have the power to legislate our rights. And that's the key point to our whole case. We'll be straight up. We're not just going after the Safe Gun Act. That obviously is a major problem. We're going after the fact, just the idea that you have to get a permission from mommy and daddy to have a weapon. That's insane. If you have to get permission and you could be refused, or they dog you around for a year like they did to me, and I heard in some places a year and a half to get in my county, it's almost a year just to make the appointment so that you can go in for the interview, okay, and then turn your application, and then it's a year from that. 6 months to a year, and believe me, it's going to be a year. So I'm well over a year, and I still haven't gotten mine. But in any event, I'm not interested in half of my rights. I want all of my rights. I want my full right. I don't want half a right. I want my full right. I don't want them to know that I got a gun. I don't want them to know how many guns I got, and I don't want them to know how many bullets I have. I don't want them to have an ID of my gun. I don't want them to have know anything. It's none of their business. The government should not be collecting information. And if you read our complaint and our memorandum in support of our complaint very, very carefully, you will see we list out there are 9 countries in the 20th century that moved towards gun control and then eventually confiscation. Between those 9 countries, every one of them went out after the people, and they killed off their political opponents. between those 9 countries in the 20th century, 170 million people were slaughtered. And just to get an idea, you know, all the wars in the 20th century, and all the people who died in all the wars of the 20th century, First World War, Second World War, Korea, Vietnam, all of the excursions, everything. You put them all together, it's only 35 million. So what's that, 3 or 4 times the amount of the people, soldiers who died in war? Well, that's how many people were killed by their own government. In every case, whenever a government removes the guns from the people, they then lash out after them. That's in every single case, no exceptions. So why are we going to let these people control our guns? Why are we going to let these people try to take our guns away? We make a very strong case here, I think, and it will get stronger. As I mentioned, we threw up a framework earlier, which was really a lot of quotes, information we were going to put into our case, but now we kind of formed it out. So on the first page, as I said, was the introduction, so to speak. It leads in, there's a court of record, and we're the people. On page 2, we cover the jurisdiction, which the jurisdiction is obviously the New York State Supreme Court, and we figured we'd do it right up in Albany. We could do this in any county in the state of New York, but we don't want to battle and make a big thing about it, so we'll go to their backyard and we'll do it right up there. Probably maybe get more notice by the media, hopefully, by doing it that way anyway. but this page, the second page, not only lays out the jurisdiction, it also makes the point that this is a common law proceeding according to a court of record. And we spell that out, and then we attach I think it's an 18-page or a 17-page document called the law of the case, which lays out in detail exactly what a court of record is. And anybody who doesn't know what a court of record is, they need to find out. It's a hugely powerful process, legal process, that the courts have forgotten about, and we are resurrecting. We're not the only ones. There are other people in the country. There's quite a few of us now in New York starting to move the courts back into a common law procedure and back up into a court of record. We have all that. If you go out to our website, left side, click on judicial process. Once you get on that page, there's a tab that says common law, top left side. Click on common law. and that's the page you want to study very, very carefully. We have probably 40 or 50 audio tapes, 40 or 50 hours of audio tapes, easily 50 hours of audio tapes up there, and lays out the process of how this works. And we have a, for a small donation, and if you can't afford a donation, we'll give it to you for free. We have also a course on court access. And that's a growing course. It's going to continue to grow. We're ready soon to update it. Maybe after we file the case, we'll update that course, and then we'll notify everybody that's already dropped it down of the fact that we have updated it. On page three, going back to our document, page three, our action at law, we cover the fact that legislators were never given the authority to legislate the people's behavior, and that's what it's all about. Nor can one people give up the rights of another. They are individual rights. Everybody has a right all onto their own, and they have the authority to go to the government and say, hey, what's up? And they have a right for redress. And the right for redress is they want to understand, what are you doing? And let's fix the problem I see. Of course, they ignore us. We've been trying to do that for quite some time. But we have found out how to take control of the political process, and now we have found out how to take control of the political of the judicial process. And our website explains that. And it's all about understanding and knowing the process, the political process, the judicial process. Thomas Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. If you're not going to go to look to understand the judicial process and common law particularly, we're not interested in BS law called statutes. We're not interested in all that funny talk that they have. We're interested in common law. And common law is very powerful. It's very interesting. It's very strong. Common law really defines what liberty is. You cannot understand liberty unless you study common law. And again, common law has a lot to do with logic. It's about, case law, and it's about maxims. It's about what's right. It's about justice. And again, our founding fathers... this is what they studied. They cut their teeth on the 17th century philosophers who spoke about liberty, freedom, and common law. So anyway, people need to know this. They need to come. If they want to be free, they got to know how to be it, be free. And if they want to have the power to take back their country and take control of their destiny, well, then they have to learn how to do that. And it's not all that difficult. It doesn't take that long. Just get around it. Kind of, dive into it, immerse yourself into it, and just by osmosis, it'll just get into you. Don't worry about remembering it. Just get interested in it. Before you know it, it'll be spilling out off your tongue. Okay, next page, page five, acts of tyranny. And we lay out our position on how everything they're doing concerning this particular right, and not just this right only, others, but we're concerned with the gun rights for this particular lawsuit. We lay it out with no uncertain terms. We're very clear that this is tyranny, and they are coming up and trying to take away and snuff out the Second Amendment. But we also go through, the fact that just this is a right. There are lots of other rights, or if you want to look at the Bill of Rights in the listing, like the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment and so on. By the fact and the way that they are violating the gun law, which is the second gun right, which is the Second Amendment, they are also violating many other rights. And we lay this out in this case under that heading, Acts of Tyranny. And that covers pages 5 and pages 6. At the end of page 6, we then get in and speak about the conspiracy against the rights. And this is where we start to, where the rubber meets the road. This is where we start to put the pressure on these people. And this is where the judges start to get a little shaky because we start talking about the U.S. codes, and particularly U.S. Code 18 and 42. And every judge, I think, knows that when we bring those numbers up, they're listening because they know that you mean business. We're going out after all of these tyrants, and we're going out to have them to pay for the damage and the wrong that they have done. And at the end of this, we'll get back to the wherefores when we get to the end. But anyway, we get into the conspiracy against rights. We lay that out very clearly. And there's a couple of U.S. codes, one in the 42, one in 18241, and sort of a sister code, U.S. Code 42, 1985. Then we also lay out here how they've deprived the rights under the color of law. Once they act outside of their authority, they're under color of law. They're no longer are under the law or under any authority. And now they're guilty of being a tyrant and violating your inalienable rights, not a constitutional rights. I don't have a constitutional right, and you shouldn't either. If you're a slave, you have constitutional rights, and they call them privileges or they call them civil rights, and they can give it to you this time and maybe not next time, and that's why you see all these crazy court cases. Under common law and the fact that we're the people, we're going out after our unalienable rights. You can't take those away from us. You didn't give them to us in the first place. The Constitution and the purpose of the Constitution was to box in the federal and the state governments. Excuse me. And the Bill of Rights particularly is just 10 lines letting them know very specifically of certain things. Don't mess around with this. But when we get to the end of that, we say, well, there's a lot more rights that we have, but these are the most important ones. You better behave. And if you want to know what our rights are, just come ask us and we'll let you know. But here's the key problem that we have lost. America has lost this out of their consciousness. And we recently have found this, and it's starting to move across the state of New York, and it's moving across the country, too. I'd like to see it move a lot quicker. What people have to realize and understand that Congress cannot write a statute that alters or corrects or controls your behavior. They just can't do it. They cannot write a statute that controls your behavior. They can't write statutes that can put you into some kind of a violation, put you into jail for some, the gun laws do. They don't have the authority to do it. We never gave it to them, and we never will. People don't realize that. If everybody understood that, first of all, there would be no argument about politics because politics would disappear. The political process is what we want to get involved in, but we don't want to get involved in the politics. So the politics needs to go away. And once you realize, well, Congress can't control behavior of people, well, all the politics disappears because that's what it's all about. Everybody trying to get control of Congress so that they get the laws to make things good for them. And, of course, the people with the most money, they get what they want. And they pay for a lot of demoralizing of America because they know that sets us up to become dumber. So, you keep a slave dumb and then you can take them over. So anyway, let's move on. Page 8, we go into the neglect to prevent. And we wrote in this here for two reasons. Number one, even though there were a lot of congressmen and senators, obviously not enough, but there were some that voted against this act, okay? Well, they still have a duty. This is unconstitutional. They, too, took an oath. They should be getting up and saying, no, you can't vote about this stuff because this is unconstitutional. We cannot put restrictions on people's rights. We've got lots of law, and we've got lots of case law, and we've got lots of common law that makes that point very, very clear in this case here. And this is what these people should have done, and they didn't do it. They should have taken their peers in Congress to court and say, hey, they can't do that. We can't have this. But they didn't. And they'll say, well, we didn't know. Well, ignorance is no excuse. You know, when you go before a judge and they get you for some statute and you agree to be tried by them, because, by the way, they can't try you unless you agree. If you don't understand that, you need to learn that. Go out to a website and you'll learn it. They cannot charge you with a crime and unless you comply and allow them to charge you with a crime. The only way you could be charged with a crime is if a grand jury indicts you, or someone comes and signs a sworn affidavit saying, hey, he punched me in the mouth and I want him arrested, or whatever it is, okay? That's the only way. If you're walking down the street and you have a concealed gun and you don't have a permit, ultimately, and you get caught with that gun and they take you and arraign you, once you give them, once you plead, you're giving them jurisdiction over you and you're done, you're going to jail. And if you're in New York City, you're going to go to jail for 2 years, at least minimum. But the bottom line is as long as you don't give them jurisdiction and you fight it, you can beat that because it's not a crime to walk around with a gun. The Congress cannot make a law to control your behavior. If everyone understood that and we all challenged jurisdiction and we all just said no, the wheels of injustice will come to a screeching halt. And we're teaching people on our site. We're not the only one. We refer to other places where people can learn. But we have everything collected on our site for people to learn. Neglect to prevent, again, is not an excuse. Getting back to the documents here. Our main focus of our case is on page 9, trespass on the case. That's the big focus on our court case. Next, number 10, they have a problem interpreting our rights. Well, we're going to interpret it for them, and we have quite a bit of an area here for interpreting rights, and we use the Founding Fathers to interpret it, because that's what Jefferson said. If they want to know what's going on, and what these rights really, what it is that we wrote, just go back to the spirit of it. Go back to the conversations, and you'll know exactly what we meant. And they clearly meant for guns to be a right. And even if they never said they're clear enough, that's totally irrelevant. They don't have to say it clear enough. We have to say it clear enough. We're the people, and we have a right to defend ourselves. We have a right to defend ourselves from criminals. Why should they be the only ones to have guns? Because you can take all the guns away you want, but they're still going to have guns. We have the right to defend ourselves. And we have a right to defend ourselves against tyranny, which is what started this whole country, is we the people defended ourselves against tyranny. And we started with the Declaration of Independence, which is the first American document, common law document, interpretation of rights. Page 11, why governments disarm people. Page 12, the Second Amendment preserves liberty. And also on page 12, the purpose of the Second Amendment. And that covers into page 13. We've got a lot of good stuff here and a lot of great quotes and even some recent quotes from today, some JFK quotes, really powerful. And we get all the way up to page 15, and then we lay out the facts. And then we come up with the wherefore clause. And the wherefore clause is broken up to A, B, C, D, E, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I. So 9 points to our wherefore clause. That's the hardest part to write when you write a complaint, I think. You have to be very clear with what you're asking for, and you have to make sure you ask for what you're really looking for. To win the case is one thing, but heck, if we win the case and they say, okay, fine, there it is, and we don't get enforcement, the governor's not going to pay attention. The Senate's not going to pay attention. They're going to ignore the courts. The media is not going to write about it. And we'll be right back to square one. So we have to be very specific, and we have to have enforcement, and we will enforce it. And if the judges won't give us enforcement, then we'll get enforcement on the judges. And there's ways to do that, too. So these guys, and again, we're going in on a court of record anyway. So to understand a court of record, that's another program. We do have 10 programs that we've already recorded. This is our 11th Monday, I believe. Unless today's the 10th. I'm not sure whether this is the 10th Monday or the 11th. But anybody wants to listen to some of our past episodes, they can go onto a website on the left side. You'll see a little box, Liberty Alliance. And you can play the latest or click the drop-down box and choose other programs that we recorded. We do have recorded programs on a court of record, what the purpose of this group is. And, everything is listed out in a way that's easy for people to see and get information on us. Okay, kind of with that, that's pretty much it. It took a little more than longer than I wanted to, but I want to open the lines up now for conversations, questions, comments, and we'll take it from there. So let me unmute everyone. And if everyone can mute themselves by pressing, I think it's, pound? Let me go back and look. Star 6 will mute you, and star 6 will unmute you. If you want to raise your hand, you can use star 8. If no one's talking and you want to talk, just pipe in. Okay, let me remove the mics. Unmute everybody. Okay, we're open. So anybody with a question or a comment, mic is open.
Page 20, items D and E. It's not clear to me what you're asking for. It almost sounds like, I'll read it. The New York State Governor, Senate, and Assembly is to, within 3 days, provide for all firearms vendors and dealers database access to run background checks for the prevention of firearm sales to minors, criminals, and mentally disturbed people. New York State is not to collect any data on the people.
Right.
That's almost contradictory, because on one hand you're saying the state is not to collect data on the people, and yet on the other you're saying dealers have to have access to that database for background checks.
Okay. Let me that's good. And we're going to be having a meeting, and this tonight is going to be a good meeting, because I've got a hard paper copy here and I'm going to make a note on it. You do have a point here. We have to be clear, and sometimes it's difficult to be clear. And you're right, we have to be a little clearer, but let me pretty much express what that point really was and what we're really trying to say here. And let me read it a little bit and try to express it. The New York State Governor, Senator, and Assembly is to, within 3 days, and I think 3 days is plenty. I mean, goodness, the governor did his job in 1 hour to take the new safe to law, you know, act up, and they were supposed to wait 3 days. I think they made a move and did everything they had to do in about 3 days. So anyway, they've got all this in there, all this information already on who has a record or whatever. But the data bank that they have to run the background checks against is a data bank that exists. And in that data bank, they should have everyone that's got a record in there. And if they can't have a gun, and that's something that we need to discuss. If someone is had a problem when they were 19 or 20 years old, okay, and they're 60 years old today, and they have not a problem since, and you know, they're real good people, I mean, why can't they have a gun now? I mean, that's something we'd have to discuss as a people for political purposes, and maybe make our argument and our point to the Congress and the Senate here in New York. But for now, there are people that have a record, people who are violent particularly, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about violent crimes.
I think that you're putting yourself into a box that you don't need to. You already have a Second Amendment right to bear arms that everybody right. has. And the only reason why anybody's arm should ever be taken away from them is because of a past record of criminal behavior for which a court of competent jurisdiction would have ruled that they are no longer eligible to bear
arms.
Right.
Well,
I
agree.
That should be on a public record.
I agree, but we have to be reasonable, too. You see, we can get – are you familiar with our – who am I talking to, by the way?
It's Liam Malone.
Okay, Lee. We're involved with also the committee man, the political process. Are you familiar with what we're doing there?
A little bit.
Okay. And when we take control of the political process, and we do expect to do that, and we hope to do it very soon, when we take control of the political process, we're going to have clout, and we're going to be able to tell the Congress what we want and what we don't want. And we can get very specific, and we can get involved in the actual lawmaking to some degree to let them know what's constitutional and what is constitutional. But there needs to be a debate, okay, on what kind of people shouldn't have guns. And they've already got some information on that. Whatever it is, it is. We just want to move forward, but we have to revisit it. So from the process, we have to do. The point is this. They have a database of people who they call criminals who don't want to have guns. Until we understand more about that database, we don't want to bog things down. We'll use that database. So whoever's in that database, when your name is run, when you go in to get a gun and your name is run against that database and it doesn't show up, okay, fine, then you get a gun. Now, if you're in that database and you don't belong there, well, then you need to take that to court. Eventually, we need to address that, and we need to discuss that from the committee man level in committees, some ideas and thoughts, and then we need to bring it to Congress here in New York State, and we need to bring it before them and let them do their work. And then we want to look at that and make sure they're not violating anybody's constitutional rights. Obviously, if someone went to jail, there's a lot of people that have gone to jail on silly little things that are behavior problems that has nothing to do with the government, and they shouldn't have been in jail. Okay.
Like taxes.
Right. All those things. So
Listen. We're
going to have to deal with them, but we can't deal with that now. We have to do something that's logical and sensible. So I do agree we have to get a little more clearer on this one. But that database exists, and we're going to have to use that database until we can make a better database.
Yeah, but they're using it now. When you go in for a NICS check, that's what they're doing. They're just checking the background, just like when a cop pulls you over when you're on the side of the road, They got a database. They run your information. It looks for warrants and wants and things like that. And they can also, they can go in as far as they want. You know what I mean? They have things that, that look for past felonies. That is all in place, and they use it now. So the only thing is what we don't want and what they were doing illegally is they were keeping the names of the people that they did background checks on. Those records are supposed to be destroyed, because what right. that is, that's a secret gun registration if they
and
do
we
that.
Don't want them to have the numbers of the guns. We're no information.
Right.
So what kind of guns, how many guns, it's none of
their
business.
That's already was in place. They're not supposed to keep those records. Some of them were, but they're not supposed to. So that part's in place. The other thing is if you've been convicted of a felony, any felony, you can get that expunged to where you can get a gun, but the process is like, oh, my goodness gracious. But you can do
right.
it.
Now,
and people have done it, you know what I mean? But you have to go through this whole process.
So my whole point is that why give them that authority? That's the whole point.
Well,
why
because
even
you have
raise
to have
it?
Some reasonable things. Look, there's more things here that are reasonable. And believe me, I went back and forth, and I was talking with Gerard about this. And anybody who wants to pipe into this conversation, you know, really chewing down on this, is welcome to our conversation on Skype when we get together in the evenings. And, of course, tonight, which is an open line, we can discuss it too. But we don't want to spend all night on this particular piece because there's a lot more to this case than this. But here's the point. We have to be responsible. Here's the situation, and you really got to think about this. I come from New York City. I was born and raised in the Bronx, and I know the mentality of people, and the people down there are pretty decent, at least when I was growing up, but there's always a bunch of riffraff, and it could be pretty bad. You go into rough neighborhoods and a bunch of kids that are troublemakers, and there are problems down there, okay? So for now, I mean, later on we could discuss things, but we need to get something that's reasonable. People in New York City have a right to have a gun just like anybody else does. But there's no reason. If I have a gun up here, whether it's concealed or unconcealed, it's none of anyone's business. But it's not as frightening or not a big problem up here as it might be in the big cities, particularly New York City. Okay? And the last, and also you have another problem. You know, what's the age? You know, I put down 21, and we could discuss that. Anybody under 21, they're going to have their parent or guardian or someone come in with them and go through the process. Then they're going to be responsible. If you're a 13-year-old kid and your parent feels you're responsible and you put a gun, puts a gun over his arm, walks down the street down here in towards the woods to go hunting, and he's with his other buddy who's 14 years old or whatever, and the parents feel they're responsible enough, well, so be it. Hey, you know. But a parent may not feel that their 17-year-old is responsible enough. That's people have look at. We have to be grown-ups. But we also have to control this to some degree. Like, you don't want children to buy alcohol. Okay, but that doesn't mean your parents, you couldn't sit down with your parents and you can't have a glass of wine with your family or something. That doesn't mean that. It's not illegal for a child to have some alcohol. It's illegal to sell it to the child. It's not illegal for a child to have a gun. It's illegal to sell it to them. So I chose the age of 21 for now, okay, and we could debate that in the political realm. Right now we want to get guns freed up. That's what we want to do. But, you know, down in the city, what made me think about 21. I thought 18, but when I thought about the city, you get these kids on the corner, and they're troublemakers, and 16, 17, 18, 19, and even some 20, 21, unfortunately. And the last thing you need is a bunch of rowdy kids packed out with guns, you know, just letting everybody see what they got, three guns on their, you know, on their hip, and, you know, it's going to be intimidating. So there's a problem, and it's going to take a process of an education for people everywhere in the cities, particularly, to be trained with guns, to talk about guns, get the responsibilities. We have to get morality and ethics back into our schools. They destroyed all this. When we get the political process back, we have to do these things.
Hey,
and if we don't do them, we're going to lose.
Aren't all these gangs packed out with guns anyway?
Yeah, but they don't show them off everywhere. Once it becomes legal, that's why in the city you got to keep them. Got to keep them undercover. So again, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, I don't know. The committee people in New York City, that's going to be their responsibility. Someone's bleeding through. Someone is bleeding through. They need to... Everyone can mute their mic. Right. I muted everybody. Everybody should mute their mics because someone is bleeding through. And you can unmute yourself when you get on the mic. Okay, so everybody please mute their mics. I'm going to try to unmute again, and Everybody should mute themselves. Okay, that noise is gone. All right, anyway, the point is this, okay? Let me just say it straight out. The people aren't mature enough to deal with liberty yet. They really aren't. But you can't deny them of it because they're not mature of it. You got to give it to them. But it makes sense. They've been so restricted anyway. Let's keep a few little restrictions on it to be understood that the political process, when we take that back, that we're going to straighten that out. But right now, the first and foremost, most important thing is to get rid of this gun control in New York State. It's got to go. And if it doesn't go, we're going to have problems. So
maybe the point
it's
beyond
be some
this,
restrictions. Huh?
Maybe the point beyond this is to expand the word criminals. I mean, if somebody is guilty of a malicious crime, that's one thing. But somebody who's guilty of a civil crime, like collecting taxes, is something it doesn't need to.
I agree. That could be easily taken care of by the fact that anybody who is convicted in a town court that wasn't a felony in a town court shouldn't be on a list. Because you see, that's where they get you. You could get arrested for having a barrel too long. You can get fined or do 3 months in jail or something or whatever, and now you got a criminal record and you didn't do nothing wrong. Who cares how long the barrel of your gun is? It's none of their business.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It comes down to whether there's a victim.
Now,
exactly. That's
the bottom
point.
Line is that person, the only reason that person went to jail, and Judge Bork said this, 80% of the people that go to jail are there because they opened their mouth. In other words, they made a plea. If you deny the jurisdiction when you ask to plea, you say, no, you don't have jurisdiction. And you make that battle, and we're making that battle in numerous places right now. Everybody needs to understand that. Everybody needs to do that. Even parking tickets, moving violations, you don't have jurisdiction. Leave me alone. No, I refuse to pay. No, reject the jurisdiction. Battle it out. Fight it. And if they force the fine against you anyway, well, pay the fine so you don't go to jail or anything, and take them into the Supreme Court. Learn how to defend yourself. But don't go with a lawyer, because if you go in with a lawyer, you're going to lose.
Yeah, same problem.
Yeah. So, but anyway, the things we restricted or put restrictions in here, and people should read through this carefully. We were very careful not to make restrictions. But number one, we have to be reasonable. We don't want a hardcore felon to have a gun. They can get one anyway, but the bottom line is they shouldn't be able to buy them easily. Okay, and that's number one. Number two, we don't want our children to go in and get guns. We want a parent to be with them to get a gun. And when they think their child is able, like I said, it could be 13, it could be 17. That's up to the parent, okay? They got to figure that out. They got to become mature themselves and stop being children, okay? And they'll figure that out. So just like alcohol and tobacco, you put the crime on the commercial end, because there you can write a statute and you can make it a crime, okay? So whoever sells the item to a minor is corrupting the morals of a minor. That's a damage, and that's something they can get fined or go to jail for. Rightly so, okay? Now, should it be 18 or should it be 21? Right now, we'll leave it at 21, because I don't think people are mature enough in the city to deal with this at 18. So this is what I'm putting in the papers. We could argue this, but I think that's something that has to be debated and worked out with Congress, and over the year or two or whatever, figure something out on that. Right now, the important things, let's get rid of gun control. I want to walk down to the gun store. I want to show them my identification, and I want to look at some guns. And in 5 minutes, they've already run me by. I don't have any problems. I want this gun. I want that gun. And I want those. Give me some ammo here. And I want to walk out 5 minutes later. That's what I want, because that's the way it should be. That's a right. A right is you can pick it up when you want it, and you put it down when you want it. If someone tells you can't pick it up until they give you permission, or we may not give you permission to have that right, then it ain't no right at all. And that's
okay. I want to talk about the common law and what Williams. Blackstone's commentaries on the common law of England stated, which is really foundational to the United States and common law anyway, about whether one is a ward of the state or one is responsible. And what was the cornerstone of that responsibility? It was that, first of all, if a person has the obligation to defend their country at arms, then that is the age at which a person is age of majority, where they should be able to buy alcohol, buy a gun, and be treated like an adult and tried in an adult court. That's really the correct place where the age should be put, in my opinion.
Well, I think it was Benjamin Franklin, or it may have been someone else, but I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said the defense of the country falls in the hands of everyone that should be armed from age 16 to 60. Now, that doesn't mean people above 60 doesn't get a gun. Of course they do. And it doesn't mean the people under 16 doesn't get a gun either. Of course they do. The point is that's kind of an age they kind of jumped up with. So maybe 16 is a good number. I don't know. If we get our educational system back on track and really get some education in the educational process, I mean, that would be really great if we can educate our children, because right now they're not being educated. They're being programmed, in case you didn't know it, and demoralized. But when we get a control of our educational system, that may take 20 years. It may take a generation. It may take less. But we'll have to figure that out as we go, because
we
want to take the process back.
Let me tell you what I've got figured out as far as 18 and 21 goes. They bandy this about as they need it. They tell my children that you're 18, I can't tell them anything to do. Then they turn around and tell me that I'm responsible for them until they're 21. That's bullcrap. So, you know, like he says, if you can get conscripted into the service to kill people, then that's the age. You know, I grew up, when I was growing up, it was 18 for alcohol. I could go in the bar when I was 18.
Well, you know what? Maybe the logical conclusion to that is in the cities, 21, and in out of cities, 18.
Well,
and again, I say this because I have a good background of the cities, particularly New York City, and I'm going to tell you that there is a problem with guns in the city that's going to take a little time before it kind of levels out and people become responsible. And that's my thinking. I could be wrong.
You're wrong. You know what? The minute everybody has equal access, the guys on the corner that are the hot shot, guess what? They'll be the first ones hired. Because when they realize that anybody that they come to could have a concealed carry, guess what? They're gonna salter away. They're punks and they're bullies, and they don't want people pushing back.
Okay.
They go for weak targets. Israel instituted guns in the school, and what happened? All those crazy terrorists stopped shooting people in the schools.
Can anybody make a case why it shouldn't be 18? Let's put it that way. Anybody out there can make a case why it shouldn't be 18?
I think that it doesn't matter what the age is. What matters is that the age that is determined is the age at which you're an adult and responsible for your own actions. And before that date, that age is upon the responsibility of your parents, and you are effectively wards of your parents.
Yeah, and we don't really have that too much defined, except for generally speaking, that's 18.
The 18 and the 21 is bad, because what they do is they use it against you. You know what I mean? They use it against the parents, and they give the kids a false message. You know, listen, they could try you as an adult at 16. You go out and kill somebody, you could be tried and put in jail as an adult at 16.
Then that should be the age.
So we can move on. I guess I'm the only one that thought it should be 21 concerning with the cities. I'll go to 18, and we'll change that to 18. What letter was that? Was that D or something?
I think that also sets up the thing for making everything 18. Never mind 18 and 21, and then you got to keep them on your insurance until they're 26. And I mean, when does this crap stop? You know, they never let anybody take responsibility.
Well, we don't want to get too lost on all of these side issues. I think what we want to do is get back into the case and the nuts and bolts of the case. I'm sure some people have already been reading this and may have other questions. We'll write up as 18. Maybe 18 is good. And you know what? If that's a problem, maybe, you know, committee people are going to have to work this out. And the people in the city may on their own say, hey, look, this is too young for our kids down here. You know, hey, I don't know. But you know
hey,
what? This is what we have to do. We have to figure it.
What's the biggest city in Vermont? They got Burlington. They got some big cities in Vermont. Relatively big, right?
Yeah.
Well, Vermont has nothing. You walk in, you buy a gun, you walk out. There's no registration.
I don't want to beat a dead horse to, you know, a dead horse to, what's that saying? I don't want to beat a dead horse. But, you know, my only point is this, is that New York City, nobody can have a gun in New York City unless you're a cop. I think they got two permits in New York City. You know, that's what I heard anyway. I don't know if that's true. But, you know, unless you're a cop, you don't have a, you can't have a gun in New York City. Okay.
Yeah, so then the only people that are that actually can defend themselves in New York are the cops and the criminals,
and
because
criminals
are armed by default.
Exactly. So
the rest of us are
victims. Let's just do 18, and we'll go right behind, you know, go past that point. So 18 is what it is, and we will have to talk about it. That should be younger. Again, you know, we're talking here about the judicial process and the lawsuit that we're going to file. But we also talk in this room about the political process and how we're going to take that over, and how, you know, we've laid out a plan and a program on how we're taking that over and where we're at and what we're doing in the courts with that. And that may come very soon. We're still waiting for our decision, which is like 5 weeks old now. I mean, the 7th is when we went up to argue the case, and it should have been out in 2 weeks. That's probably a good sign, because they're having a problem writing their papers, in my opinion. So,
justice delayed is justice denied, and it's time to hold them. It's time to serve them with constructive notice. Give them a constructive notice with a time frame from the beginning?
Well, again, we don't have that kind of an ability with the courts at that level at this point. You can't even talk to them. They're like God. We're going to change that. Look, there are a lot of problems that need changing, but we can't do nothing until you have power. And we're not going to have power until we become the elected committeeman. When we become the elected committeeman, we're going to control both parties in the state of New York. The reason we're going to control both parties is because we have Democrats and Republicans working together. And we both have the same focus.
I want to establish something that I think is really important here for you to be cognizant of. Okay, constructive notice is the basis on which people go to jail and have judgments rendered against them because they put themselves in dishonor by not responding within the appointed time frame. So if you are raising a cause of action against somebody, it's your responsibility to give them a constructive notice that has a time frame. And if they don't respond by the appointed time frame, then they are in dishonor and they need to be called on it at that point.
You are right, but the point is this, is we lack certain experience and we're getting the experience as we go. And as we get that experience, we get better at what we're doing, and we say, now we know how to deal with that problem. Well, we don't know how to deal with the appellate court yet. This is the first time we're in there. We're making certain assumptions that 2 weeks, and it's a logical deduction. We sat down and talked it out and said, you know, it sounds logical that the answers would be in 2 weeks. Now, that could be wrong.
What about our other cases where we did give them notice when they went? Well, they violated their own court rules, right? Some of the times they didn't answer us.
Which is
violence.
That appellate?
No.
Here's what you have to do. You have to
hold on. I want to hear what Gerard was talking about. What court were you talking about? The trial court or the appellate?
No, the trial court didn't answer us, and then
we sent them
notice like he's talking about.
We did.
But that's because there was a clearly defined, I don't know, what do you want to call it, statute, court rule?
Well, there's time frames that are statutes, and the judge made a big deal about statutes. You know?
Doesn't the appellant have time frames that they have to answer?
I don't know where they're at if they're there. You know, again, this is all new stuff to us. Oh, well, we're going to figure it out.
We would love to send them a notice if we know, you know, maybe it's 45 days for the appellant. We don't know. You know what I mean?
Here's the way you frame it, gentlemen. Gentlemen, you do it like this. First of all, we're the masters, and they are the servants. So the master is the one who decides what the time frame is that's reasonable, but the master is also a reasonable master, so the master will also put forth the assertion that if the time frame is deemed to be unreasonable by the servant, then we're willing to negotiate. So your position is that I'm giving you notice of 30 days to respond. If you have not responded within 30 days and have not responded with a request for additional time, which will not be unreasonably withheld, then you are in dishonor.
Well, you're absolutely right. Look, I agree with what you're saying. The problem is we've got 20 different battles going on. We have to choose our battles, and we have to figure out what we're doing. We're going to fix all these problems. You know, we've got to live with certain problems, but sometimes you can do all the right things and they ignore you anyway. That's been the matter of fact, everything we've done was ignored. And the only time we get any place is when we put them to the pressure so hard and pump against them, so eventually we get something out of them.
Well,
and that's
the way it is
because they're not used to it.
I think that 5 weeks is enough time for them to mull this
over.
Well,
I agree.
And I think if they go any further, they're going to eventually come up. What they're going to do is they're going to check with their bosses and their bosses are going to say, go ahead and break the law, we got your back. Maybe that's what they're working on. If we give them too much time, they'll get into more mischief. So
right. Okay, so John,
I agree with that, but my big point is this. You know, maybe we'll make the phone call. We'll start with a phone call and see what the norm is, and then we'll take it from there and make a decision on what we'll do. But here's the key thing. We know we have problems in every single political process, every agency, whether it be even the Supreme Court themselves or the appellate court. Now, the appellate court, I believe, and I really don't know exactly how these guys are chosen, but I think they become trial court judges first in most cases, and then eventually they get appointed by the governor or somebody appoints them, okay? But somewhere they have to be either elected or appointed. Therefore, they're controlled by the committeemen. And we just have to figure out that process, whether they're appointed. If they're appointed, then we go after the people who appointed them, and we put them into the vice, and we get then we pull a meeting for the judges, and then we discuss the process. Because there are a lot of problems with the appellate court. There is no process for a lot of these writs that we try to get through. You know, if you want to do a writ of mandamus, they don't have a process for that, for any kind of a request for that. They don't have a process for the big writ for produce the body, habeas corpus, okay? They don't have a process for that. You know, everything takes 60, 90, 120 days when there are certain emergencies that should be answered within 7 days or 10 days, you know, and that we have to make reset the process. That process, I understand from reading, was available prior to 1939. And a lot of things happened in 1939. First of all, there's a lot of changes in our New York State Constitution in 1939. And also, at the same time, they came up with this Article 78, which had been around for a while, but they pressed all of these writs into the Article 78. And that put us into a situation where it now bogged us down. And people forgot what a writ of mandamus is. I mean, we argued a case with the Attorney General's office, and they didn't even know what we were talking about, okay, about a writ of mandamus. They were making stupid arguments that didn't have anything to do with what we're asking for. That's how bad it is. That's how bad the lawyers are. The lawyers are morons, and they're not interested in anything but they want to keep it real simple, and they want their backroom deals. They want to come in with a suit. They want to get a lot of money, and they want to live a good life, and they don't care about you. They sell you down the road every day, okay? They don't know what law is. They don't even know what their own rules are. They don't obey their own rules. Well, we have to change all that. We can't do it today. We got to do whatever the battle is at hand at the moment, but we have plans to deal with all of these problems. We've even written them out already. And one of those things is we have to meet with the Supreme Court, particularly the appellate court and the court appeals, and we have to hash out some of these problems we just spoke about. And we have to get things written down on how the process is and how long it should take and so on and so forth. But
okay, so I agree with everything that you said. I agree with everything you said. And so here's the one point that I'll leave it at, and you take it for what it's worth. If you tie constructive notice to this writ that you're writing, and you give them a reasonable time frame to respond, after which you will consider them to be in dishonor, then you've put a stake in the ground saying, this is what I consider dishonor. You need to respond by the time frame one way or the other. And then after that, you have a cause of action against them. You have a legitimate cause of action because they are in dishonor. Now, you said they ignore
us. That. I like that. And as a matter of fact, I know you know Thornton, and he makes that kind of idea. You know, he puts that position down. And I think we'll take that advice up. I think this week we'll just do a phone call, and then next week we'll follow it up because we'll have more time then. We'll follow up with something in writing and do that with the honor and dishonor. Because you're right, that is a good way to go. And we'll do what we can there. But we will fix this problem one way or the other. I don't think it's going to get fixed that way. It definitely is not going to get fixed. But I don't think we're going to get them to move any faster either. But who knows? Maybe we will. So we'll try that, and we'll do it. And that'll let them know that we're here some more. But on top of that, the day is going to come, the day of reckoning, when they're going to find themselves sitting down on the lower seats, and we'll be up on the upper seats, and we're going to give them the riot act. This is the way it's going to work. And we're going to discuss it with them because we know that there are certain problems that have to be dealt with. You can't have a court of record down in the trial court unless the appellate court is ready to deal with a problem that they have to be able to respond to while there's a trial going on. and they have to do it in a very quick time. There's no reason why they can't do it almost immediately. They could do it in days, because a writ of mandamus is nothing special. It's just
right.
a matter of interpretation of the law. That's all.
Well, maybe this is a good way to get your writ of mandamus, like he said. Put it in there. Put the dishonor thing. Give them a time. You state the time, especially if we're opening court of records. They'll understand real quick who's doing things.
No, I like
and,
that. I'm going to do
if
that.
And if they think that you're going to actually take up a cause of action against them, the lower guys are stupid because they think they can kick you out of court and get you on a technicality. But I'll bet you the guys up at the appeals court and the appellate court, they're not going to like that. They're not going to want causes of actions against them that are actually proceeding, because what's going to happen is it's going to make people ask questions. It's going to make their bosses ask questions, for one. What are you doing that this guy's got a cause of action against you? You know what I mean? So I think that's an excellent idea. And for us, they figure we're not bluffing, because we've thrown enough stuff at them. If they go looking in our background, they know that we're here for the duration.
Yeah, they know.
Yes.
They got it.
And let me add one more thought to this as well, which is very important. In common law, when somebody is in dishonor, summary judgment comes against them.
Right.
That's what happens to you with your money.
Right. Well, again, that's something they don't recognize, but we're going to teach them about it. You're right. I agree.
Actually, they do recognize it. They recognize it when it's convenient to them and when it's convenient to their process.
Well, that's true.
They use it against us every day.
Absolutely. There are certain factions of our government that use it every day, and the federal courts, particularly what they have, the quote-unquote tax courts, which is in the federal court system. That's where they have the hearings. It's the federal court. And it's just that those courts are the tribunal for the tax man, for the IRS, which is insane. The IRS is a corporation to begin with. They're not sovereign, and they shouldn't be able to have a tribunal. But yet, nevertheless, they do. And so when you go to the court, when you appeal in a federal court, they understand it, okay, because they deal with it every day. They may make believe they don't, but they do understand it, because they deal with it every day when they make their decisions on the tax courts. But on the level of the appellate courts in New York State, I don't think they know about it. I may be wrong with that, but I don't think they know about it. I don't think they understand that. Now, the Court of Appeals, I think the Court of Appeals in New York, I think they understand it. And you see, that's the boss of the appellate court. And we have every intention of going right up to the Court of Appeals should we not get what we need from the appellate court, which is almost an impossibility from my perspective.
Right. Now, consider the strength of your appeal, where you have put forth a case, you didn't get response within the deadline, there's no court record that shows that there was a formal response, you now move for summary judgment doesn't happen, you go to Court of Appeals and you demand that the summary judgment be put forth.
Well, that's a good
because
idea.
The other
I like
party
that.
Is in dishonor.
Let me ask you, do you have any experience doing this particular thing yet? Or just
yes.
you've learned. Do. Why
yes.
don't we get
personally,
why don't
what
we try to get
is,
why don't we try to get on the phones sometime in the next couple of days. I can't do it tonight. But let's try to get on phone on Skype one evening, and let's walk through that, because I'd like to exercise that. I think you got a good point here.
Okay, just shoot me an email. We'll arrange a convenient time in the evening. I have to work all day, but I don't mind putting some time in the evening on this.
Okay. All right. Anyway, anybody else out there got anything else they want to look at and talk about in our complaint? There's a lot of people here. Someone must want to pipe in with us.
Well, my bone is the criminals need to be specialized in the sense that the felony convictions are a result of someone taking some rights from some other person, and it's a violent crime, or it has
well,
a victim.
Well, you're absolutely right, and in our case we do cover that. I made it right up front. I didn't even put it in the footnotes. I wanted it to be blatant, and so we put the U.S. Code right out front. And we're going right after the governor, we're going right after the Senate, and we're going right after the Assembly. And we're telling them, you are coming up, you've conspired to injure us, you've oppressed us, you've threatened us, you've intimidated us. Okay.
No, I'm referring to the D clause in the in the list of.
Okay, let me go to the D clause and read it.
Where it says minors and criminals.
Oh, okay. New York State Governor, Senator, within 3 days, okay. Minors
right,
and criminals. Right. What we're going to do, I think, in criminals, I think it should be felonies. Now, is
no, it should be violent. It should be,
that's exactly right.
It should be violent felony. Listen, you can take your car out with no insurance, and that's a freaking felony.
Yes.
Okay.
And what's that got to do with guns?
Redefine the felony to be some deprivation of somebody's rights.
Is there a way we can word this where we focus in on the fact that they were either indicted or because then there's two ways you can get properly convicted of a crime. And
I think that the box that they need to be in has already been suggested, which is that if there is an injured party and the person has been convicted for violent crime against an injured party, that becomes the basis.
Okay,
right.
Injured party.
And that's
that.
Injured party, violent crime, that's all you need to know. Because that's a people, and that's a person that did a crime against the people, and
yep.
we don't want that.
You're right.
We don't,
you
we don't need...
Huh? It's the corpus delicti, to
right.
be official.
Gerard,
okay.
Can you make a note, that this is the wherefore clause, letter D, and you want to rewrite that?
Right.
So you
right.
rewrite
I also
that,
want to draw to your attention that articles A, B, C, and D are almost identical in their wording. They're
yes.
rather long, and really at the heart of them there are some very concise points that you're making. You should focus on those points, get rid of all the rest of the wordiness of it. To call a press conference, that's item A. Item B says, restore the law of the land and recompense for dereliction of duty and abuse of power. Article C, again, it's the same thing. What was the heart
right.
of that one?
Let me tell you, this is just a little experience I've had in the past, and also looking at cases that other people have done, and look at cases that Schultz done. Schultz won a couple of cases recently. They have no teeth in them at all. Because, yeah, he won, so big deal, but he wasn't specific on any kind of what he wanted the judges to do. We want to be very specific, and we want to be very specific what we want. We want the order to come out from the court to say very specific things to very specific people. We want to go after the governor and say, this is what you got to do. You know, the fact that he's guilty of a crime, and he's going to make recompense by confessing that crime, and we're going to make it very easy for him. He just has to say, hey, all these gun laws are repugnant to the Constitution, therefore they're null and void. We want his mouth, his voice on radio, TV, in the newspapers, everywhere. We want the Senate to do the same thing, and we want the Assembly to do the same thing. Now you have
all I'm saying is that you've not been clear on that point. I agree you need to make that point, but you've not been clear by the way that you've worded this. That's all I'm
saying. You want to rewrite it and get it to me? You want to rewrite A, B, and C and then get it to me, and we'll discuss it?
All right.
Because I agree. These are the most important part of the case is your wherefore clause, other than winning the case, of course. But you have to be very – you can win the case and get nothing.
Yeah, the case, like you said, the case that Bob Schultz won, it says, yeah, you're truly elected, but it didn't say
anything. It doesn't mean nothing.
they don't recognize him. And so the judge said he's elected, so now he has to go around and prove what his authority is as an elected official.
So this is one guy who's going to go down in Westchester County, just outside the Bronx, and he's going to walk up to the committee and say, hey, all you guys are fired because I'm the only elected committee man here. I'm going to tell you what to do. And what do you think they're going to do with him? And by the way, you can have a gun in Westchester County. So, but I know the guy that would walk in there, he's got a lot of guns himself. So.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of guns.
He's going to need them, let me tell you what. With them
he can open up a store, I think.
Wait till he tries to get them out of office. They'll be gunning for him because they're all criminals down here, let me tell you what.
Right, so we have to make sure we word this right. If you want to propose something for A, B, and C, I'm all for that because we do need help on being specific, and we're going to be discussing this week. And anybody that wants to be in on this conversation during the week, again, maybe Wednesday night we'll kind of focus in, go on to Skype. If you're not on Skype, download Skype. Add me on your pal list, John Duresh. Just put John Duresh and look for me as a member in Skype and then request for me to be a pal or whatever, have contact. And when I get you, I'll accept the contact, and I'll make note of your name, and that you, and when we have the call, if you're online, we'll pull you in. Gerard, what time do you want to do this Wednesday? Is that good for you? Wednesday night?
Wednesday night. I don't even know. What's today? Monday?
It's Monday. Tomorrow's Tuesday. And then usually after Tuesday, Wednesday follows.
I'm glad you straightened that out, because my week's up later.
Usually happens right after midnight.
Listen, it's after Monday, and I don't know what day it is anymore. yeah, Wednesday's okay.
Okay, so what time? 8 o'clock? 9 o'clock? What
yeah, 8 o'clock. I think it's easier
right.
for me.
8 o'clock Monday. Anybody who wants to be part of that discussion group in order to hammer out better wording in these areas, all you have to do is request me as a pal on Skype, and I will make sure that I make that connection. And then if we see you online when we're doing this, we will invite you into the group.
Well, Liam's going to write some stuff anyway, right, Liam?
Yep.
And so you'll have
that. Together.
Yeah, and we'll throw that out there, and maybe, you know, hopefully you'll do all our work for us, Liam.
yeah. Write some stuff. You know, you got my email address and everything. And anybody who needs my email address, my phone number, my fax number, or my email, even my mailing address, out on newyorkcommittyman.org, hit contact, and you'll get that info there. So, all right. What else? Let's get back. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of this thing, maybe.
Hey, I have a point there. Who here really thinks that Cuomo is going to have a public conference, press conference, and admit that the law is wrong and he made a mistake and he's sorry?
Well, we're not.
He's not
going to
do it, but you served constructive notice and made the demand. That's the value of it.
Yes, and then we can enforce that. The court can enforce it. You know, we're not asking him to open up the skeleton closet. He's probably got about 20 skeleton closets. Okay, we're not asking to open the skeleton closet. We're just saying to the guy that once this court case is won, you need to get out into the media, and you need to tell the media that, even if you want to put it this way, the Supreme Court, what do I know? The Supreme Court has ruled that anybody can have a gun,
a
so nothing I can do about it, you can have guns. You know, whatever it is.
Yeah, the fact of it is that New York State is not a legitimate state, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but we're gonna move on the assumption that it is, because it should be. And they can take their fiction, and they can shove that someplace else.
Well, if you take the assumption, does it cause you problem in the common law area?
No, because they're not going to want to bring it up, because then they're going to reveal the fraud.
Right.
It's just like the license. They're not going to want to bring it up, because they're not going to reveal the fraud. So it is what it should be.
One of the problems is they don't want to bring anything up, because, listen, they could go into these cases like Liam was saying, what our wherefore. If they really wanted to, they go in and say, well, we don't understand what you're asking for. You know, they go back and forth. But you see, they don't even do that to us. They don't even get that far, because they're afraid to ask questions, because they figure by saying we need this more defined, they're opening up doors they don't want to open up. We have no dialogue with them at all. You know what I mean? On these answers, they never answer anything. You know, really, they answer with a non-answer, the political answer, which is like, you know, there's no position there. You know, they take that middle road. We don't understand because but they haven't even got there with us yet. You know, to say that, well, this needs to, we don't understand. You need to define this more, because I don't think they want to go there with us.
That's why you simply hold them in dishonor. Right. Give them constructive notice and hold them in dishonor.
I agree. Yeah, good idea. I mean, we've learned about that recently ourselves, and we're trying to do that. And I never thought about doing it with the court, though. The appellate court.
That was the crux of Tony Davis's speech 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
But Tony, he's got he goes through that process, but he leaves you in a very bad situation. Now, I want to bring this point up for anyone that's listening in on him. He gets a lot of wins, but then you're going to get the wrath of the IRS from the tax court, because if they came out and they put something on you and they say, hey, this is, they put an illegal levy on you and they hit you for 50 grand or 100 grand.
I remember that. He was talking about the Administrative Procedures Act. He wasn't talking about a constructive notice.
Okay.
So it's statutory what Tony Davis is recommending.
Right, and he's got ways that he can have the liens released, though. Okay,
they're not real liens. They're notice of liens, right. I mean, that's,
and he can remove any illegal lien that's placed. But the problem with that is you're just stirring up the beehive. If you're going to do that, you have to also file a lawsuit at the same time to get them into your court, in the Supreme Court, before they pull you into their tax court, and that's a kangaroo court. And I'll tell you what, you know, it might be very, very hard to try to work your way to take back control of a court of record by these criminals in their court system, because these tribunals, you know, they got some experience in this, and they're not going to give up these courts very easy, huh?
Erwin Schiff will back you up on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But Erwin Schiff didn't understand the problem.
I know. But still,
yeah.
he messed up.
But we understand the problem. And when we get and make the battle, they'll know that we understand the problem. But that doesn't mean we're not going to get a battle. And it's going to be a battle for control. And that's when we're going to now need a court that's higher than that to make decisions. You know, the appeal court, the appellate courts, we need to get them to make decisions on, for instance, we then would have to do a writ of mandamus, and to take control.
The hinge-pin of liens is the conversion in the county. When the clerk takes the lien, which is just a piece of paper, and converts it into a negotiable instrument.
Right.
And that's the background of the lien. And that and you can do that, fix that problem in the county.
Right, but once you do that, you better be doing the Supreme Court and suing the IRS in the Supreme Court, with you being the plaintiff and taking control of a court of record at the same time. Because once you remove their lien, they're coming at you with all their guns.
No,
okay?
They can't. They go away because the
lien.
Oh,
no, because they pull you into if they think that you owe them $100,000, and they think they can get away with it by doing one of these phony baloney liens, which they do all the time, and then they realize, well, this guy's hep to it, and he had us thrown off. Well, okay, let's just drag his rear end in court, and we'll put him in jail for a couple of years, and we'll get our money, too, because that's what they're going to do. You got to deal with both problems. You got to get rid of they're making an accusation that you owe them money, okay? And that's what you have to deal with. You have to stop that accusation. You have to squash that, and if it takes the Supreme Court – a court of record, you know, you as the plaintiff to do that, then that's what you're going to have to do. But if you don't do that at the same time, you're going to find yourself in their tax court, and
probably
they're going to take control.
I think I agree with you, John, but I wouldn't call them. It's confusing, I think, to some people to call it a Supreme Court. It's a superior court. Do you want to say it's a Supreme Court? I know that.
Well, that's what I'm used to seeing, but you're right. It is a superior court. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's think about that. Let's think
everyone
about that.
Hold it.
The Supreme Court, the appellate court in the U.S. appellate court is not higher than, it is not superior to the tax court, the court of record.
Right.
Okay, so it's not, that's the superior court is actually the tax court. And the only issue that the Supreme Court can hear out of a tax court is a case anything concerning only the constitutional issue. Okay, that's the only thing they can listen to. And because you gave them jurisdiction, there is none.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why ours would be different, because we'd be battling for jurisdiction, denying their jurisdiction, saying, wait a second, you guys represent the servant. You're a corporation. You're not even a people. You're not a sovereign. We're the sovereign. This is our court. And now that's the battle that you got to fight. And they're gonna fight tooth and nail. And that's only gonna be settled by a writ of mandamus from a Supreme Court, which is not necessarily the superior court.
Right.
So it is.
But our courts of record are superior. I just get that. I just like to hear that, hit that home.
Right. Courts of record is the superior. Absolutely. Hey, anyway, anybody else got anything? We got a lot of meat in these papers. Maybe someone wants to bring something up or ask questions, discuss.
Has Phil, has everyone read through all of your paperwork, gave you some answers? And
I don't know how many people have read through it yet. This paper, by the way, just went up. I think I got this finished at about 12, 1, maybe even later than that, 2 or 3 o'clock today. And this has put it into a better framework than what was up there yesterday. And this is more closer to what our court case is going to be.
Question about the format. I remember Bill saying that a brief should be 16 pages, and if you go over, you know, you have to be,
right.
You know, I don't know if you consider this a brief or
I guess you could call it a brief, but it's the complaint. And, they may have rules. I don't know if New York has rules. Well, I'm sure they do on the number of pages.
But a pleading?
No one reads five pages, six pages. It takes a while to read this. Well, for the layman, these guys don't read anyway, and especially now they're going to read common law stuff and really confuse them. I mean, 19 pages, they're going to look throw it out on you just because it's too long.
Well,
no, I disagree with you on that. I think when you bring forth a court document, you must articulate all of your arguments clearly and concisely.
Yes.
And it's expected that the party who is receiving and reading this document, because there's a cause of action afoot, must respond to all of the points at law.
Mm-hmm.
That's
even
right.
Even if it's 100 pages, so you have to give them time, though, right? You have to adjust.
Well,
they
got 20 days?
30. Hey, you know what? I could read this document and understand it in an hour just while we were on this call and having a discussion. Anybody with a brain and a half a legal mind can comprehend these points.
Right. And it doesn't take long to get a half of a legal mind either. You get it by osmosis. Just put the tapes on and listen to the tapes over and over again. Stick them in your car. Stick them in your MP3 player. Stick them wherever you can stick them and listen to them. And I'm going to tell you, before you know, these things are going to be spilling off your tongue. Trust me. It's like anything else in life. Just get around it. So and look at, if you want to be free, you can't be ignorant. This is the stuff of freedom. This is the stuff of liberty. This is liberty right here. This case is the case of liberty. And this case could be taken and reset in all, pretty much the same format. Our founding fathers spoke about all of our rights. So you just change the quotes. You use the same framework. This is it. It's a simple process.
It's exactly what Jefferson said when he said that a people that expects that they may be both ignorant and free will be neither ignorant, will definitely not be free, something to that effect.
They expect what never was and never will be.
Exactly. Thank you.
That's a very important quote. And if anything gets stuck into our ears, that should be the quote. And by the way, you know, we have a course on law that we put together. It's a free course. Well, we ask for a donation. We ask $30. If you haven't got $30, there's a note there. Just send me an email. I'll give you it for free. I don't care because people need to get this. But we've put in there the process on how to get into the courts. And we're going to, like I said, we're going to be updating that soon. And if there's anything you want to really get involved with, you go to the footnotes. Get to the footnotes, open that page up, because that's where you're going to get knowledge. Just open up a footnote. Start with A, whatever it is, and look at, open that up and read those footnotes, read the footnotes, then go to the next one and the next one and read through it, because that's the law. That's the footnotes I created. Many words. They're just single words or phrases, and it explains the meaning of it, and it's the process by which you make an argument when you write a paper. And as you go on, you make your own footnotes and throw them in there, you know, and just throw it inside, a little notepad inside the footnote folder. So that's one way to really learn, and I'm going to be up there. I got a lot of more new footnotes to be added to the footnotes that are up there right now. I bet you I added another 40 of them, 30 or 40 footnotes since I put that one up. Any other questions, comments?
John, good evening. It's Manny.
Hey, Manny, how you doing?
How are you? Are you guys talking about
the... tomorrow?
Yes, I will.
What time are you heading up?
We're leaving over here around 8 o'clock.
Okay.
You want...
Who's heading up with you?
Me, Steve... Tracy, possibly, what's her name, from Putnam County.
Oh, yeah.
I know Brian called me, he's going to be there.
That's good. We're setting a table up there, so maybe you can come help us out at the table if you want.
Yeah, I have a big banner. Yeah, okay, I'll be at the table.
We'll
we had that
there,
banner. I'm going to bring it.
All right.
Hey, Manny?
You want to ask a question or something or make a comment?
Yeah. You guys are talking about the case. I've been listening. You have it online. I think you have it over here. Is this, which one should I be reading? The one that it says third draft, sixth draft?
Sixth draft of action. Let me explain what's up there. Anybody that wants to be on this case as a plaintiff, and we need plaintiffs, okay, the first button that says click here, sign up as a plaintiff now. Click on that, fill out the paper, fax it, or email it to me. The second one is to file an affidavit for our action. I wrote an affidavit. If you want to add to it, fine. If it's good the way it is, that's fine. It's basically, you got my guns, I want my guns back, you know, that kind of thing. We need affidavits with our complaint. The more, the better. We could do with just one, but it'd be better if we got 100. The third one is to read and download the two-sided flyer. Anybody, you know, that can print out 50, 25, 100 copies, you know, pop it back in, do both sides, and hand it out.
I have 1,000 of them printed already.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I got about 500 myself, and others have printed them out for tomorrow. So if you could print them out for tomorrow, or other meetings, or other Liberty meetings, and pass them out, we want to get people to sign up.
Can I just mention one thing? I have to go to sleep. I'm very tired.
Yeah.
I have a couple of meetings scheduled with the legislatures tomorrow, and I'd like us to go together as a group if possible. Manny, John, me, Robin, Steve, Mert, Steve. Okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Good night, folks.
All right, Phil, we'll see you in the morning. Call me early.
Tomorrow.
Call me early. Wake me up. If you don't wake me up, you're going to be in trouble waiting outside for me.
I'm going to call you at 4:30, okay?
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, the next
John,
one.
John, I need to bow out also, but I did send you the email with the revised A, B, and C, so you can see it and reword it as you think appropriate, but I think you'll see that it cut more to the chase.
Okay.
I think you should endeavor to do that with the rest of the document wherever possible as well.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I'm looking for people to help me. And when we hash that out, it'll be numerous of us hashing out to make sure we get the right wording and people seeing it from different vantage points. So,
right. Best of luck tomorrow.
All right. Thanks. All right. The next button is the donate button. Click here to donate. And people, I wish everybody would click on that one because we surely need some money. Okay. We have to file these papers. We've got a lot of things to do. The next one is click here to read. This is the sixth draft, okay? I numbered them because we've been every day, you know, we've been changing it and putting a new one up. So if someone goes up there, they can now get the latest. Well, I had the fourth. Let me look at the sixth, okay? So it's the sixth draft. This is the actual complaint. The next one is a memorandum of law in support of the complaint. We did that, and that hasn't been completed yet either. But the framework is reasonable on that one. It's reasonably good. We just wanted to put a lot more information in there concerning what our founding fathers had to say, particularly and the right to carry, you know, to have arms. But we didn't want to make our complaint 50 pages long, so we broke it up and we made a memorandum of law in support of the complaint. Then the next one is to read the law of the case. Now, the law of the case, that's 16 pages, and that defines what a court of record is. Okay, so those are the three documents. The document we're reading right now is the complaint itself, which in common law it's called an action at law. Okay, so that's the one you want. And whenever anybody visits our pages, on the top left side, there's a little button on the top of the links, and it says click to refresh page changes for page changes. Every time you come to a page, you should always click that a couple of times to make sure you're looking at the newest page. Otherwise, you may be looking at pages that are actually on your computer, and you're not seeing the latest stuff. So you have to refresh the page to make sure that you're seeing the newest stuff. So,
sounds good.
Anything else, Manny?
No, that's it. So actually, I have to kind of read all of those documents. I thought that one was following another one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to print out maybe two or three of these documents as they sit for right now, because I haven't got time tonight to correct them, to make changes on them, for tomorrow so that we can put them on the table and people, if they want to read the case, they can read it, you know. So if you run one off tonight, maybe bring it with you, you can stick it on the table.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. So we're gonna have a table with a tent?
I don't have a top. Do you have a top? I never thought about asking Phil if he's got one. Do you have one?
If you let me know, Brian has a top. You could have brought
it.
I could email him and see if he could bring it.
Right.
He has one of those.
Is it too late to call him? It's 9:30.
I'll email him now and see what, you know, he's going to be writing up. I know that he has one of those that they open up instantaneously. You don't have to do anything. Just
great. Yeah.
Open it up.
I didn't even think about that. But yeah, if you got one, bring one. We may need it. Who knows? I've got a table. I've got a lot of signs. If you got signs, that's fine. You got flyers, anything you want, just stick them on our table. The key thing we're doing is we're trying to get sign-ups for the court, for the complainants for a court case.
All right. I'll send an email to Brian about that.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right. Any other questions or comments or anybody
else?
No,
I just got to finish reading all these documents that you have put up over here. I didn't read them. So I would just listen to the conversation as you guys were going along.
All right.
John, this is Hisham from Staten Island.
Hey, how you doing, Hisham?
How are you?
Good.
And can someone be a plaintiff in the case even if they don't have a gun?
Sure, of course.
Okay.
The fact that you don't have a gun and you want a gun, you don't have one. I want a gun. I should be able to buy one. And you know what? It's a right to have one or not have one. It's your choice. You know, and if tomorrow you want to decide to have one, then I want to be able to get one, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we talk to people outside of New York, and we're letting people outside of New York that if they want to join this case, there's no reason why they can't. Just make sure they put the state, we don't have a place for the state on our paper, you know, because we figured everybody was in New York, but just put down the different state you're in on that paper when you sign it, just have your state there, and we'll put you on the complaint with us.
Okay, and I don't remember if you went through it, but is there any update on the committee man case?
Nope, we're sitting waiting. It's now 5 weeks today, and we were talking about writing a letter concerning the fact that they are in dishonor, so we're going to see if we can't write. So we'll probably get an answer soon anyway, but we're going to go through the exercise of making the point that they're taking an awful long time to make this decision.
They just don't know what to do, right?
That's what I think it is. Here's the problem, okay? And in a nutshell, any case, this is whatever they decide is going to become case law now, okay? And so any case that they write, they have to say, well, this is a case about A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. They got to say what the case is about. And then they got to say, well, you know, the position of this side was this, this, and this, and that side said this, this, and this, and in response to that, the other side came up with this and that and the other thing, and they explain the argument back and forth, and then they make their decision and start dealing with their conclusions or thoughts on these arguments they're seeing between. But New York never made any argument. They defaulted, okay? And the whole thrust of the case is that New York State refuses to obey the law. It's that simple. There's nothing complex about it. There's nothing to think about. And the court, the appellate court, has no choice but to say to you, well, they got to obey the law. And, well, you got to make them obey the law. So we want enforcement. What are they going to do? What can they do? They're stuck in a pickle.
I'm sorry. Can there be an appeal in case they favor... they rule in our favor. Is there an appeal process for the state can take?
Well, there's always the... Well, first, there is... If there's a division... I don't know how exactly it works, but I think in order to go to the Court of Appeals, you have to have one dissenting judge. I don't know whether that's true or not. That's something we haven't learned yet. But in any event, what are they going to appeal? They have nothing to appeal because they didn't make an argument. So it's doubtful that they will appeal to the next level up.
Uh-huh.
So, and the other thing is that we put them on notice of the U.S. Code 42 and 18. So that should have shook the boat up a little bit too. And so, you know, I can see their dilemma, and I'm sure they're under some political pressure maybe. If anyone's paying close, well, let's put it this way. I don't think anyone's paying close enough attention to this yet, as strange as that might be. I really don't think so, because that's how dumb all of us are, including them. They're as dumb as we are, by the way. Matter of fact, they're dumber. So I don't think the big guns are really looking at this, but I think the appellate court realizes the atomic bomb they have in their hands. Okay? I think they realize that. And that, even though there may not be pressure on them from an elite position, let's say, nevertheless, they know there's going to be some really heavy repercussion from their decision. Huge repercussions that's going to be felt across this entire nation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's exciting times.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Thank you very much.
All right. Anybody else got anything? Mic's open. All right, well, let me end the recording. We'll continue to talk maybe for a short while, but let me bring the recording to an end. Give me a second.